Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand. It's also Fukushima irradiated, which is really good for the environment because now everybody's got a part-time job as an eco light bulb, which is good for the mercury contamination in the soil and the water. Did you know that one of those mercury light bulbs, just one of them, with the virtual microscopic quantity of mercury in them, can contaminate 20,000 litres of groundwater? You know that? You just put one of these bulbs in a landfill, and that's what happens. If you break them, you have to institute emergency protocols. Rubber gloves, you know, a jar with an airtight lid. And you actually got to leave the room for about half an hour or something like that until the mercury vapors dissipate. That's how poisonous and dangerous it is, right? And then you have to sweep it up, make sure you get every single little tiny little bit of speck of that glass, and you've got to put it in that resealable jar, take it to a specialist disposal facility, and pay a fee to get rid of it. That's what you're supposed to do. I'm not kidding. I've read it up. And dig this. Guess how many people actually do that? Like nobody. They just chuck them in the bin. All goes into the landfill, contaminating all the groundwater with mercury. Thank you! And the thing is, what's worse is that that's actually the only viable option to get rid of them. Because when you take them to the facility to get rid of them, they don't actually take them, and they say, no, we can't take those. and then the New Zealand government takes a while, some years back, saying that we're going to outlaw incandescent light bulbs to ensure that only the mercury brain-numbing light fixtures are the only thing that will be available for everybody to buy. You can only buy poisons. You can only buy mind control weapons for your home. Ooh. And I know there's people talking about mind control weapons. I'm not joking about that either. There's been studies. These things frack your brain up. They mess you around somewhat. Hey, maybe my brain's a little bit fracked because of this radio show, because when I do it, I've got these gargantuan, you know how energy saver bulbs are about the size of a fist? Maybe smaller. These things are about four times the size of a fist, easily four times the size of any light bulb, and there's four of them. So that's like, 16 light bulbs above me? Mercury-filled ones? Sure hope I don't break one of those puppies, otherwise this place will be like a meth cook's house, you know? Just contamination all over the walls and the ceiling and what have you. Now, furthermore to mercury being in the light bulbs, it's also in your frickin' teeth. I'm not joking about that either. The American Dental Association, the ADA, not to be confused with the ADL, although, never mind. They came up with this propaganda campaign a while back, demonizing dentists who use gold teeth because, they're just ripping you off to try to do it expensive. Use the amalgams, which have the most deadly neurotoxin named mercury known to man in it. Yeah, and get a root canal while you're at it so that it provides a blood flow directly to the bottom of your gum for the mercury to seep out of and go right into your heart ventricles. That's what they do. And goodness knows what kind of damage it's causing. We know that it's causing Alzheimer's. Had some lady had several mercury teeth, amalgam fillings. Sorry, I accidentally tell the truth sometimes. Have all of her fillings removed properly by a proper dentist? Just remember, if you're going to get your amalgam fillings removed, you've got to know that dentist knows what they're doing, because you can mess them up and hurt yourself even more. But anyway, this lady managed to go see a good one. Forget the name of the dentist, but still a good story. She got all of them removed, and her Alzheimer's vanished, right? Within hours of the procedure finishing. Hours, okay? People are like wandering around going, oh my God, how are we going to cure Alzheimer's? This is so terrible. They make shark movies about it. Oh, obviously the best way to cure your Alzheimer's is to grow sharks with giant frickin' brains and then harvest their brain material and then put it and then put it on your brain cells, right? And help them to regrow. No. How about this? You stop purposely contaminating people with mercury. Look, cures aren't necessary if you don't get sick in the first place, and if you don't have disease and cancer causing cramp all over the place all the freaking time, you might actually somehow remain healthy. What a radical concept. Hey, in fact, it is a radical concept, especially if you're a medical doctor. There's only one field of health that they don't teach to medical doctors. And guess what? That's right. Nutrition. Nutrition. A simple thing we can do in terms of our health, and they don't teach it. No wonder everybody gets sick. No wonder there's several doctors out there that are able to prescribe cancer medication, 50 plus million dollars worth of cancer medication to people, you know, who don't even have cancer. Happened in the States a couple of weeks ago, I think. I think David Whitehead told me about that. And you got to be really, really concerned whenever medicine is making money. Right, if somebody broke ass and they're healing people, you know, say like Rick Simpson, for example, and they're just getting around, they're doing their thing, and they're helping people as they go. It's not too bad, is it? It's fairly trustworthy. Somebody's making millions of dollars, on the other hand, and 97% of their patients die, as the Australian Medical Association discovered was the kill rate of chemotherapy. Not the cure rate is 30%, but the kill rate is 97%. It's a weapon. Okay? They've weaponized medicine. And they're trying to kill us all. Alright? They would if they could. Because, hey, what's great about a human race that's been exterminated? Cheap real estate! Oh, yeah. I don't understand. Anyway. Over the weekend, I'm also sorry for the people who've been lusting after those Vinnie Eastwood Show archives. I've been, you know, when you work real hard for a couple of months and you just kind of like lose your mojo for a little bit and you kind of feel totally exhausted and you just can't do your work. Yeah, that was last week for me. And conveniently, I only had to do 3 shows because of Thanksgiving. By the way, happy Thanksgiving, all of those Americans who went through it. I wanted to join a Thanksgiving call with these people, but they hung up the call before I could have a chance to join. I don't think that was because of me, but I wanted to say, Happy Thanksgiving, everybody! I bring gifts! Smallpox blankets for everybody! You know, it'd be nice. Festive season, reminding people about genocide. I think that's kind of my day. That's kind of like, you know, one of my callings. I love holidays. And I also love exposing scumbaggery. What's not to like? Is there an outlet to all of this frustration? You know, you get really angry, you learn about how you're being exterminated, you learn about how you're a slave, but then something happens. The seasons change. The summer comes in. The summer in the city. And we have a wee song that we just recorded over the weekend, myself and my bandmate, because it's the new summer schedule for the Vinnie Eastwood Show, and we thought we'd do a nice summery song for you. So, AFR, if you're there on the board, if you could roll that track immediately, that would be very nice. AFR, are you there?
Ooh, in the summertime, in the city, when the girls are all so pretty. In the summer, in the city, when the girls are so pretty, I feel like I'm walking on the clouds. When the sun shines down. In the summer, in the city, when the girls are looking so pretty, with all those nice fresh fruits and vegetables tended by vendors on the side of the street making a living. In the summer, in the city, when the girls are so pretty. The heat and temperature is rising much faster than yours.
if I can contemplate all the implications upon you now. The summer, the city, things are heating up. In the summer, in the city, you have a half full cup. In the summer, in the city, when the girls are so pretty. In the summer, in the city, when those girls are so pretty. Don't care about me in the summer, in the city, when those girls are so pretty. They distract me from all the important things as I get sold quietly into slavery in the summer. Yeah, in the city.
There you go, folks. Hope you all enjoyed that. Yeah, it's the new summer schedule. It's a summery song, I thought, you know. And we put it together in about 24 hours. I spoke to a couple of musicians on the weekend. One who's been practicing guitar for 7 years and can't hold a tune. And another who's been writing for 10 years and hasn't published a song. And that's what I come up with in 24 hours. Okay, here's the problem. Musicians are afraid of being judged. That's it, in a nutshell. That's the reason why musicians don't publish their work. They're afraid to be judged. Allow yourself to be judged. Hey, if nobody criticizes you, how on earth are you going to correct any problems with your work? All right? They take it very personally and offensive if you insult their song or say that they can't play their instrument. But the fact of the matter is, if you can't play and you can't sing, isn't it a good idea if somebody tells you about it? You know? That way you can practice more so that you can play, or practice more so that you can sing, you know? Improve yourself in some way. If you got something raw there and it needs to get out, why hold the world hostage, right? And by that, I mean, let's say poetry, for example. You've got 10 books of poetry at home that you've written yourself, but you haven't published any of them. You've never gone to so much as a cafe to read them out in an open mic night or anything of that nature. You haven't done anything with it. What you're doing is you're depriving the world of your contributions to the artistic elements and arts, you know? Don't do it. Just get it finished, whatever it is. Finished enough. You know, the song we just played this, far from perfect. But at least I got something, you know, some good elements in there. A little bit of engineering here or there, should we write? Okay, that's, I think, what all musicians and artists of all kinds should really start thinking about is how to stop fearing criticism and just start getting your content out there for people to enjoy. All right? Don't doubt yourself. That's other people's job. We'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It is the summer schedule for those of you who are freezing to death in the Northern Hemisphere day after tomorrow type situation. It's quite cruel, actually. I'm like laughing at you all because you're freezing while I'm like hot as frick under these lights. But, you know, okay. Let me just back up the truck a little bit here. Because I was thinking about finances, right? Like Vinnie Eastwood Show finances. And one of my really great listeners, James, has donated enough cash so that I can purchase a new computer. It has been purchased. It is on its way. When it gets here, a lot of things are going to change, right? So let me explain the protocol. I have no producer to get guests for me. I have nobody to edit the videos, nobody to edit the archives, nobody to upload for me, nobody to write for me, nobody to do anything for me, other than the only people that are actually there to help me in terms of the production of the Vinnie Eastwood Show are the board ops at American Freedom Radio, who are incidentally doing it pro bono. Okay? So I'm going out to protests, filming them, speaking at them, that kind of thing, bringing all the technology, bringing the banners for people. I'm going out to public meetings, filming them, editing them, uploading them. So by myself, I am the center of protesting coverage, the center of public meeting coverage, and the center of a 2 hour per day in radio, audio and video format every day of the week. Okay, this is what I do. It's a shockingly, shockingly large amount of work. And when you do huge amounts of work, you sometimes burn yourself out and you can't do it for about a week or so, and you're going to go at half pace. And that's what happened last week. When a new computer arrives, however, things will be different, I hope. I would like an intern, please, if you are in Auckland and you want to learn how to do what I do. And believe me, you are not going to find this easy. This is going to be very, very difficult for you. So If you want to volunteer for me, you best be prepared to work your ass off for absolutely nothing. For years, same way I did. Learn everything from the ground up and wind up eventually using your skills to help enough people so that people will help you by giving generous donations and what have you, okay? That's kind of what I expect, because that's what I expected of myself, and I did it. It's about perseverance. It's not about, like, following orders and what have you. It's just about learning, really, really learning, and taking the time to do the work that is absolutely necessary, simply because of the fact that I've now got too much work. Too much work. There is too much for just me to do alone at this point. Just doing the radio show alone, if I didn't even have to do any public meetings or protests, is still quite difficult and extraordinarily time-consuming. And because I've only got one computer, it makes it all the more difficult. You know? I mean, think about this. If I've got two computers, one next to each other, often what will happen is I will not be capable of editing, say, audio and video at the same time, because, you know, I can only concentrate on one thing at a time, right? I can have both the programs open, but one of them's going to finish before I can start to do the other one. If I have two people simultaneously, me editing one thing, the intern editing the other thing, that way we get everything done in half the time. Isn't it? Which will allow me a little bit of extra time to do those videos for public meetings and things such as the documentary film Take Back Your Power. Some of the promoters of that film in New Zealand put on a public meeting earlier last week, which I filmed, and I have not even begun to edit, because I've just been either A, incredibly exhausted just from all the work that I've been doing, or B, just not even having the time, you know? I'm just so busy with other stuff. It's quite a terrible situation at this particular moment in time. The entire reason why any of this is even possible at all, why I can even do any of the videos or any of the radio shows, is not because of me. Necessarily, I'm just the man behind the curtain working the levers and what have you. It's actually you. Okay? If you listen to the show, you contribute hits to the website automatically and you give me more credibility by default. If you financially contribute to the show, I purchase food and rent, and that allows the show to continue. Which reminds me, I think I got like a $140 internet bill that I got to pay off as well. Some donations for that one would be really nice. Extraordinary expenses, such as just rent, food, and your daily things, actually not really all that much when you think about it. So, what my plan is, and this is if you will it, if you, the listeners, actually will it to happen, it will. If you donate monthly to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, whether it be $5, $10, whatever, some people do $100. Some people just recently signed up to do 50. Let's try and get in those regular donations, okay? Because if I've got a baseline of funding to work from, then there's things that I can do, much like how I rapidly expand and find utilization for all this new equipment that gets donated to me by generous listeners like yourself. But on top of that, if you've got enough funds available, it allows you to do certain other things. For example, there's many times when I've been contacted by people that are halfway down the frickin' country who need me to come cover a court case, and I can't. Just can't. Why? Because I'm broke. Because not enough donations are coming in. And that's it. And that person winds up going to jail for years and years, and nobody gets to tell their story. Because I don't have enough money to go down and get them. All right? That really Fs me off. And that ain't your fault. That's my fault. You know? I could be doing the show one day a week and have a slave job and hate myself the majority of the time and get really depressed and start getting psycho and angry at everybody, like I was when I was working before I started doing all of this stuff full time. But I wouldn't get a tenth of the work accomplished that I have when I'm doing it full time. You see what I'm saying? Those financial contributions, let's think about expansion. Let's talk about aggressive expansion. This needs to happen because there ain't a media in this country. There just ain't. That doesn't freaking exist. Media has to do things like be honest, like tell people stories that they don't want to hear because they have to hear it. Okay? We don't have that in this country. It doesn't freaking exist. I'm really angry about that as well. I hear this Sean Plonker freaking scumbag. Right, I'm not afraid to call him a scumbag. He is a scumbag. Talk radio show host here in New Zealand. You know, one of those real typical pituitary arrogant fracks who are just mean to everybody, use nothing but ad hominem insult in order to make their freaking points. That is your choice. It's him or some other flavor of him. There isn't a media in this country. And I need people's help so that I can expand what I'm doing. I want to have enough time, resources, staff, and effort so that I can bring these activists, like say Penny Bright or Russell Malcolm or Ben Vidgen or any of these other incredible, incredible New Zealand activists that have a natural voice for radio, and just bring them into my studio every week so that they can do their own little weekly radio show to start off with. And if they want to, I'll want to be able to give them the resources, you know, just give them a little computer or something like that and a microphone so that they can go home, record their own radio shows, and I'll give them a website as well. I can just make pages on my website fairly easily enough for which they can upload all their little shows by themselves so that they don't really need me to help them in any way, shape, or form. I'll just give them the tools they can do it themselves. That way, I want to create a New Zealand-wide, because guerrilla media is global, okay? It's a global idea, all right? So we've got lots of people at realguerrillamedia.com that are already contributing with their RSS feeds, and there's plenty of information downloading there. However, because of the fact that New Zealand does not have a media, really at all, to any degree, I'm going to have to create it. All right. Just like it didn't have a 5-day-a-week talk radio show talking about conspiracy, I created it. It didn't have a YouTube channel that was outranking the mainstream media, I created it. All right. This is what I do. I see a problem and I create the solution. That's what makes me different from the other 5 million New Zealanders walking the earth today. I actually saw a problem and solved it. Mm-hmm. You get the idea now? How serious I am about this? How effed off I am at these scum that are lying to everybody all day, every day. How much work and effort it takes to expose that scumbaggery and offer the alternative, i.e. the reality, to people. It's not easy. It's extraordinarily time-consuming, and it is generally relatively expensive. Okay? Now, if you want to see that happen, so I'm just talking specifically just to the New Zealanders, because we do lots of international content on this show as well, which I think the New Zealanders also need to hear. I need contributions in order to accomplish that. It's just that simple. Like, you know, you see the setup that I've got here. 72-inch LCD screen display behind me. 27-inch IMAX, two of them. A tower of lights. A camera on a tripod. Webcam. Microphone. And then that's it. Okay? And I can do all this and beat the mainstream media at their own game with just a few simple devices. I would love to have the funding to be able to do that for an activist. Okay. We have Tom Filer just joining us now, so I'm going to add him to the chat. He's my scheduled guest today. Oh, it's not working. Bugger. All right. Well, we'll talk to him after the break. So it should be fine then. But yeah, I do think that people need to take me a hell of a lot more seriously if they haven't been doing so already. I mean, sure, I joke around and like to have fun and I'm pretty laid back, but at the end of the day, I'm pretty freaking intense. And I get stuff done that other people wouldn't even conceive or dream of, you know? If somebody said 6 years ago that the most popular YouTube channel in New Zealand for news in 6 years' time will be one talking almost only about conspiracy and scumbaggery, people would have just laughed at them, you know? That's freaking nuts. How could that even be possible? Made it happen. I don't have a choice. Okay? Well, you know, what am I going to do? Sit back, watch the media lie to everybody all day, every day, watch all the activists try and approach these scum for interviews, only to have them interrupted every 5 frickin' seconds so that they can't even deliver their message amidst being insulted, ad hominem attacks, and all that kind of crap? You think I'm going to sit by and just let that frickin' happen? When there's good, decent people who are trying to save my country from tyranny, who are trying to save me from consistent toxicity in my environment? You think I'm just going to sit back and hang those people out to frickin' dry? No. No freaking way. Not on my watch. I love my country and my peoples too much. What the hell is the point in just letting all of this stuff happen? Take a stand. Once in your freaking life, if you haven't already, and do something to stop the scumbaggery or to help those who are trying to stop it. Don't sit around. Sweet Mother of Mercy! Things are bad, real bad. And it all needs your help right now, just as much as I do. Go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Subscribe today. Right back.
Politician, can you make a right decision for all of us? For all of us, politician, can you make a right decision? Can you make a right decision for all of us? Yeah, for all of us. You can talk the talk, but will you walk the walk? Will you bring us comfort? Will you bring us comfort? You can talk.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest now joining us from Wall Street is Tom Filer. And we still don't seem to have your webcam working there, Tom. It was working great this morning. But now, no matter how times you reset it or reconnect or do anything, it doesn't work at all, which is a real F-off. But, you know, we'll make lemonade out of lemons. Welcome to the program anyway.
Well, thank you very much, Vincent. I'll keep working on the video, see if we can get it going. But it's always great to join you and your audience.
Yes, yes. What have you been up to more recently? What have you been looking into?
Well, you know, as always, I'm working, trying to understand the investment markets, what's going on with currencies, what's going on with the stock market, the commodities. That's my business. And so that's what I spend a good deal of my time trying to figure out.
You discovered any recent elements like in the U.S. financial system that people might or should be aware of?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, one thing I've been working on, I haven't made this public yet, but I've been working on what I believe are 5 priorities that people, investors and people with investment portfolios need to prioritize really immediately as well as for 2014. So if we've got some time tonight, I can maybe go over those 5 priorities Those are some of the things I'm working on, which I think people need to be very aware of. By the way.
Proceed.
Sure. I'll go through, just mention them, and then as the show goes on, we can get into a little more detail about them. One of the first priorities, and perhaps I think one of the most important ones, is to protect the value of your U.S. dollar possessions and assets. That's number one. Number two is to secure the assets in your IRA, your 401k, and in your private retirement accounts. Number three, protect your gold and silver value. Number four, get your investment assets out of their stock and bond markets. And a second part of that is to protect your deposits in their banking system. And number five, the fifth priority for your investment strategy, invest in food and natural resource assets or commodities.
So where would you like to begin in terms of explaining this? Because we only have four segments left. Got about 5 minutes left in this segment.
Okay, well, I think one of the, as I said, the first priority, one of the most important ones, and, you know, some of these, I know that you have an international audience, and so some of these are specific for U.S. investors, but there's others that are globally oriented. And I think that one thing that everybody everywhere in the world has to be very sensitive about is what's going on with currencies all over the world. And so from an investor's standpoint, you really have to take a look at your investment portfolios and your assets and understand, you know, what type of implications changing currency dynamics may have on your portfolio. And so, for example, some of the more obvious implications of things that are going on out there is this year, currencies all around the world have been depreciating. About a month and a half ago, I wrote an article and did some speaking about how currencies all across the world were, I won't say crashing, but they were devaluing quite dramatically. And this includes, for example, the Brazilian currency. Brazil took a numerous steps to try to support their plunging currency. The currency in South Africa, in Australia. In China, all across the world, currencies were depreciating quite dramatically. And one of the reasons for this, of course, has been over the past number of years, the U.S. dollar in its role as the world reserve currency has been devaluing itself. And, of course, this devaluation has been caused by the money printing by the U.S. Fed. And what this has done is this has lowered the value of the U.S. dollar all across the world, and thus it's made currencies all around the world less competitive with regards to the trade policies of the various countries around the world. And so as the U.S. dollar has depreciated, you know, caused by the quantitative easing stimulus, this has caused other currencies or other countries all around the world to depreciate their currencies. And it actually got to a point about a month and a half ago where currencies were beginning to spiral down almost out of control.
Can we see a global financial collapse coming in terms of the US dollar collapse, for example? A lot of people have been talking about this for some years, that the pressure being put on the US economy by the sheer weight of the quantity of money that's being created out of nothing is enough to set off a chain reaction to bring the whole world's economy down.
Yes. You know, as you mentioned, Vincent, people have been concerned about that for years. And as time has gone on, as the dollar has depreciated further every year, that possibility becomes more and more at our doorstep, so to speak. For example, let me tell you one of the problems that the United States faces is like threefold. Number one, as your audience, I'm sure, are well aware of, The U.S. dollar is being used in trade, bilateral trade between countries, and in the trade of oil, less and less by many, many, many countries. So countries are really beginning to drop the U.S. dollar as a world reserve currency. Now, the impact of that is that that means that there's a lot of, there'll be a lot of dollars, a very high supply of dollars floating around throughout the world with no place to go. In other words, they're not being used anymore in bilateral trade and, of course, trade in such commodities as oil. Now, the problem for initially the United States and then the world with regards to this is that the dollar, in its role as the world reserve currency, has enabled the United States to acquire a very high level of debt. Been very irresponsible, and the U.S. debt has increased dramatically over the past decade, but particularly over the past 5 years. And so the United States has responded to this by, of course, printing money, so-called printing money through its quantitative easing. So now we've got the problem of the U.S. dollar being used less out there in world trade, and yet the Fed is on a money printing, a U.S. dollar printing.
Well, when you say the money printing problem has been especially big since in the last 5 years, how many years ago did the U.S. president get elected, the new one, you know, Barack H. Obama?
Well, about 5 years ago.
I don't think that's a coincidence.
Yeah, but, you know, the debt has dramatically accelerated under the current administration, but the U.S. government and the U.S. politicians have been on this path for many years. There's really been the Washington establishment has been on this path for many, many years.
Something tells me now, that they were on this path and they simply needed a slick salesman to convince everybody not only to follow the path, but to jump off the cliff at the end of it.
Well, you're right. That's where we're headed. So now the Fed has a problem with the dollar being used less out there in the world, used in bilateral trade as well as in the trade of various commodities such as oil. Now they've got a problem with the printing of the money, printing more money when there's already an oversupply of money, which is depreciating that currency, is a big problem. So right now, the Fed is in a position where the only way to support the dollar is to print less money, which means they've got to begin to so-called taper back from the excessive money printing that they're engaged in now. So
it's kind of like a cancer out of control. And so naturally, their cure for this cancer, which they're creating, is to create even more cancer.
Absolutely. Well, you know, we had a little taste of the possibility of the Fed tapering or pulling back from the quantitative easing or the money printing back in May, June, July, and August, when they even hinted at tapering. We saw interest rates begin to skyrocket.
Yeah. Oh, well, we'll get into this more after the break, ladies and gentlemen. Tom Filer, Wall Street Extraordinaire, is my guest. We'll be right back.
Moving with you.
is now hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio, the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest and confidant, Tom Filer, here to give you financial advice for the coming economic times and indeed the ones that we're already in. Tom, welcome back. Okay, so where were we leaving off? We were talking about the interest, I think, interest rates.
Yeah, well, I think we were talking about the dilemma that the Fed has gotten the United States in with regards to its demise, U.S. dollar's demise as the world reserve currency, and then the continued money printing by the Fed is causing an oversupply globally of dollars, and that's causing the dollar to depreciate even further. And so what this, at least in our analysis, indicates is that the Fed is really forced to taper or to not print as much money, to pull back on the quantitative easing. Now, you mentioned the interest rates. We saw that when the Fed considered tapering, we saw interest rates go up dramatically. And they really appreciated at historic levels as far as the appreciation of the interest rates. And that quickly caused a downside to the stock market and a dramatic downside to bonds as well as to other commodities. So that's the dilemma that the United States and the U.S. dollar faces, is the cure to the dollar's decline as the world reserve currency, which is an easing or a tapering of the quantitative easing, may cause U.S. assets, the stock market, bonds, as well as other assets, to decline dramatically.
And what are we supposed to do about this, though? There's nothing we can do, is there? Because it's outside of the control of the people. So people basically just got to somehow insulate themselves from it.
Exactly. And, of course, you know, I always look at things from a money manager standpoint. So there are things that can be done in your investment portfolio to protect what may very well be a dramatic decline in the value of the U.S. dollar. In an investment portfolio or within an investment strategy, you can use currency ETFs to hedge the value of your dollar. You can use the futures market, and I'm not talking about speculative forex trading, but I'm talking about using hedge strategies to protect the decline of the dollar. You can use that strategy in the futures market. You can also, you know, directly buy foreign currencies. So as the U.S. dollar declines, other currencies may benefit to the upside. And you can also use a strategy where you own some assets overseas in other currencies. So those are some of the assets and some of the strategies that can be used to help to hedge what may be a continuing and maybe even an appreciating decline of the U.S. dollar. But, you know, I've got to say that these are strategies that most people aren't used to. It's not been a strategy over many years to have to hedge the value of your dollar asset. So a lot of investors are unfamiliar with how to do that. So investors need to make sure that they consult with professionals before they're making decisions on strategies like this.
Do you think that this lack of securitizing more or less U.S. dollar assets has been a deliberate scheme on behalf of the bankers to get people massively into debt so that they could wind up buying everything out when it collapses for pennies on the dollar?
Well, sure. Yeah, there's been, of course, a tremendous use of the U.S. dollar globally and as a way to try to stimulate the U.S. economy and, to some degree, some areas of the global economy. The powers that be have very much wanted the dollar to be predominant throughout the United States, of course, and throughout the world. And the use of the dollar in a predominant fashion is one way in which the powers that be have been able to enhance their wealth. They'll be the first ones, though, that will be ready to enhance their wealth as the dollar declines. And they've been doing that for years. They've been doing things to protect their assets from the dollar decline. And so this is why everyday Americans need to incorporate these types of strategies into their portfolio.
So is this why, as the vast chunk of the world's wealth essentially got destroyed in the 2008 financial crash, the elite are still the elite because they controlled that crash and hedged all of their bets against it?
Oh, absolutely. That's got to be one of the infuriating aspects to what has happened from 2007 to 2009 and through now. Everyday Americans saw their stock market holdings go down substantially. They saw their real estate holdings go down substantially. Now they've seen from 2011 through now, they've seen their gold and silver holdings go down substantially. There's always somebody on the other side of these trades. Somebody's been making money off of these decline or these depreciating assets. So the global banks who were on the verge of bankruptcy and all the wealth of the powers that be in these global banks, they're doing fine right now. Wall Street is fat with wealth. They've not been hurt at all by the decline in all these assets since 2007. Everyday Americans, on the other hand, are facing the highest unemployment levels and underemployment levels than we've had in decades. And not just Americans, but all over the world. Here in America, we have the most people we've ever had on food stamps and other government support programs. So while everyday Americans and as people all over the world have deeply suffered from the devaluation in wealth since 2007, Wall Street and the global banking system is doing fine.
Now, I heard a recording, I think, of Bill, I'm not sure if it's Bill Mayer or some kind of comedian, discovered Stefan Molyneux over the weekend, and there was a point in Stefan's analysis where he talked about how human beings are now farmed, as in we're cattle, we're livestock, essentially, tradable stock that are live. And he was saying that, everybody knows this, really criticizing Stefan for saying it when he's trying to clarify, do you understand that this is the way things are right now, that we're livestock? Now, what I found very strange is comedians are supposed to be fairly intelligent, right? They have to be in order to come up with good jokes, right? Yeah. Yet he believes that everybody knows that they're slaves. I don't think so. I don't think so at all. We've got a grand design here, and the grand design is so intricate that most people, when hearing about it, will dismiss it offhand as being crazy and will certainly not go into the large quantities of evidence. What do you say, Tom, yourself personally, if you try to explain to somebody that the financial system is controlled by the elite and that you're simply trying to give people tools so that they don't become victims of it? What do you say to somebody who thinks that you're crazy, that to deny what it is that you're saying?
Vince, you mentioned a great, I guess, phenomenon, which is, people, tend to psychologically accept and get used to pain. What happened between 2007 and 2009, when all those assets appreciated for just millions and millions of people all over the world, a lot of people have slowly gotten used to, certain things like high unemployment and a very high number of people on food stamps and other government support programs. And yet, if you just take a look at what has happened factually, you see exactly that concept of what you just mentioned there has happened. Or it's happening. So, for example, back in 2008 and 2009, the big mantra was that, we've got to make sure that these big banks, are not too big to fail. And we've got to protect depositors, and we've got to protect investors who have funds in these big banks, protect them from these banks going bankrupt again, or on the edge of going bankrupt. And yet, we see that the great global banks today are bigger than they were back in 2007, 8, and 9. So I think that's one thing people have to understand. And as a matter of fact, they now control more deposits today of people's money than they did back in 2007, 8, and 9. So what we were told was that, you know, we've got to make sure that these banks are not so big that their failing would put everybody's money at risk. And yet the banks have gotten bigger and more people's money are in these banks today. So just the very opposite has happened what we were told was the objective of a lot of the rules and regulations and laws that have recently been passed.
Now, there's two kinds of people in the world. There's a conspiracy theorist who believes that powerful people who have a lot of influence use their power to maintain or grow their influence, or a coincidence theorist who thinks that everything happens by sheer coincidence. There's no such thing as backroom deals. There's no such thing as lying. Those people are insane. It's just like I'm not gonna water it down or sugarcoat it. They're insane because all facts point to the direct opposite. Right? That's what insanity is. Denial of facts. Isn't that right? So, on that very basis of that definition, our society, almost in its entirety, is completely insane. And somebody was telling me yesterday about the 20% political class, like the 20% of people that are walking the earth today that are intelligent enough to figure out what's going on had they been led down the path to choose. But the problem is they're overridden by a percentage within that is so powerful that it's capable of controlling the 80% of people who cannot think for themselves in order to direct them against their own interests, including the remaining 20% of people who are intelligent enough to work out what's going on. It's a big dilemma. And I said on my Facebook status this morning, Tom, I'm not sure if you follow Facebook, but in order to have a mass awakening, in order to reach critical mass, the masses must be taught how to think critically. What would you say?
I think that's absolutely right. The interesting thing is what's going on out there, how the interests of the wealthy are overriding the interests of the great American public and the public all over the world. It's really all out there in front of us. In other words, people talk about conspiracies but people just have to read the newspaper and kind of take a common sense look at what's going on out there. So, for example, people are very aware that when the banks almost defaulted back in 2007 to 2009, the banks, of course, after the wealthy took their profits, the banks were bailed out. And, of course, the banks were bailed out not with real money because there was no real money to be had, but the banks were bailed out by debt. And so now, we have generations behind us that are paying for the bailout of the banks from 2007 to 2009. Now, if anybody follows the international laws and regulations that have come down since the bailout, they're aware, as I think many of your listeners are, is that the new plan, should there be banks, global banks, the same ones, heading towards defaults, the new plan is for what they're calling a bail-in. And what a bail-in is taking the assets that are in these banks and using them to support the new defaulting global banks, the ones that almost defaulted in 2007, 2009.
Whoa, 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 whoa. So they want to steal all remaining wealth that's already in their holdings so that they can just give it to themselves and bail themselves out.
Yeah. In other words, they want to use other people's money. And, of course, that was what the bailout was. The bailout was using other people's money and really debt from generations behind us to bail out their institution. The new plan, because they can't issue more debt, the new plan is to actually take the assets within the banking institutions and to reformat those, to take them away from being just simply deposits and then to securitize these assets to help to financially support the bank. So they're going to take your money, your deposits, they're going to reform them into such securities to then support these defaulting banks. And so we just talked about how it's interesting how there are the major global banks actually control more deposits and more wealth than they did back out.
Oh, hold on. That music came in pretty loud there. We'll be right back, folks, after the break. Ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. The show is trying to walk right with the almighty, you know? If there is such a thing as an almighty entity, I think he probably wants us to fight for ourselves rather than let us be saved. You know what I'm saying? I think it's part of the human condition that there is good within us, and it's constantly battling against the bad within us. And once you've conquered the bad within you, you start to realize there's still a lot of bad out there that must be conquered, I think. Part of those ways of conquering it is removing their tools of conquest, namely financial scumbaggery. And this is why we have the wonderful Tom Filer with us today. Now, we only have two segments left, Tom, and I apologize, but we haven't gone totally deeply into your plans of how to help people financially. So I'm going to be relatively quiet here. I need you to sort of explain in detail your strategies for helping people out of this financial scumbaggery.
I love the way you put that, financial what is it?
Scumbaggery.
There you go, scumbaggery. Well, it just kind of finished off, I think our discussion was that I think you're right. People just need to see and understand what's going on out there. And you can read about it in the newspaper, but you have to have the right context to understand where things are headed. And once you understand that, then you can better understand what's going on and then how and what you need to do to be able to deal with it more effectively. But just to quickly review, we started off with the importance of protecting the value of your currency assets, U.S. dollar possessions and assets, and making sure that your investment strategy has a plan to do that. We also talked about the danger your assets are in the stock and the bond market, not only here in the United States, but throughout the world. And so you've got to make sure that you understand what these stock and bond markets can do to your assets. And you've got to begin to diversify out of these markets and into investments that are more conducive to your interest, your best interest, and the best interest of your family. You've also got to be very cognizant of your money in their banking system and try to figure out and understand where your deposits can be, again, safer for you and more advantageous to your interest. There's actually banks and financial instruments that are available to you that get your money out of their banking system and also get your money out of the derivatives laden banking system, which continues to put your deposits and your assets at great risk in their institution.
And do you personally offer services to that effect? And where can people go to take advantage of them?
Well, absolutely. We've been working for years with our clients to do this, and it can take some time. It can be a transition to do this, or in some instances, you can move very quickly to do that. But we've been doing this for years. And you can certainly, if you have any questions on how to do that, you can contact my office at the following email, my last name, F-Y-L-E-R, filer@tiac.net, and that's TIAC.net. So again, the email address for any questions or specifically how you might consider doing it with your personal financial circumstances, you can email my office at filer@tiac.net, T-I-A-C.net. Another priority that people, I think, have to consider with regards to their investments is to protect your gold and silver value. It's heartbreaking to me since 2011 to see the dramatic downside in the value of gold and silver, because we know so many people who have a lot of their assets in gold and silver and who trust gold and silver as a storehouse of value for their assets. For the longest time, and certainly in the DVD that I've been privileged to do with Chaplain Lindsay Williams, we have for a long time counseled people to invest in gold and to consider gold as a storehouse, as a protective asset for their value of their assets. But we've also counseled people to make sure that you protect and that you hedge your gold and silver values over this time. So it's heartbreaking for us to see people not do that and to have the value, at least in the short term, over the past 2 years, the value of their gold and silver assets go down. We continue to be concerned about the asset value of gold and silver being at risk. And so this is why we would continue to advise and suggest to investors who have gold and silver, particularly those investors who have a large amount of their assets in these precious metals, to make sure that you have a protection strategy and a management strategy for these assets. We believe in the long term these assets will do very well, but in the short term we see no reason why investors need to see the value of their gold and silver go down and plummet to the degree that it has. And we continue to see certain scenarios where gold and silver can lose additional value. So that's one thing that we're once again just reiterating is the necessity to protect your gold and silver value. Back in 2012, and I think one of the first DVDs that I did with Chaplain Williams, I mentioned that gold and silver are assets just like the stock and the bond market. These are markets that the elite can manipulate just like any other asset out there. And we believe, our analysis shows us, that the elite have manipulated, for various reasons, the value of silver and gold down. And we believe there still is an interest in doing that. So this is why it continues to be important to manage and protect your gold and silver value. We believe you can continue to buy it, but you need to manage and protect it as well. Another.
Do you feel that people need to have solid gold in their possession, or is paper gold enough?
No, we believe that it's more important to have physical gold and silver ownership.
All right. Sorry, continue. And,
yeah, maybe later in the show we can go into a little more detail about that, but with regard to how it's been, gold and silver has been manipulated. But one of the biggest ways in which gold and silver has been manipulated is actually through the securitized representation of gold and silver through the gold and silver ETFs. So that's why it's important to physically own gold and silver. We recommend that the owners of gold and silver, physically gold and silver, have their ownership diversified. You don't want to put all your gold and silver eggs in one basket and physically hold it yourself, because it could be at risk in your physical ownership of it, in your physical possession of it. So we also recommend that you hold some of your gold and silver assets outside of your physical possession of it as well. Another priority we believe that the investors need to have, kind of relates to our discussion that we've had thus far today, is we believe that you need to invest in food and natural resource assets. Investing in food and natural resource assets gives an opportunity to get your money out of their system, to get your money out of paper assets and into more tangible resources and tangible assets. The history of owning natural resources is such that natural resources perform very well, even when times are good.
We were talking about paper assets and gold assets, and you told me that 90%+ of paper, gold, and silver out there doesn't actually have real gold attached to it. It just doesn't exist. They're just selling you paper.
Well, let me just go through the history a little bit of the ETFs. You know, before the ETFs were created, and I guess we're going back to 2001, 2002, prior to the gold ETF, you had to physically buy and hold gold to own it. Well, what happened was, over many, many years, gold had not appreciated that much. Ever since 1973, when the world was taken off the gold standard. And so the powers that be came up with a way in which to dramatically increase the value of gold. And the way they did that was through the creation of these currency, of these gold and silver ETFs. Can you still hear me?
Yes, yes.
Okay. And so what that did, imagine, and just think about this commonsensically, the creation of gold and silver ETFs dramatically created the ability of millions upon millions upon millions of more people to own at least a representation of gold. So that dramatically increased the demand for gold, and so there had to be a dramatic increase in the supply of gold as well. More demand necessitated, of course, more product or more supply. But of course, the problem is that you just can't simply, start mining a dramatically greater supply of gold. You just can't automatically do that. So when you created a dramatic increase in the demand for gold, there wasn't the ability to increase the dramatic supply of gold except by leveraging and borrowing off of gold. In other words, creating a debt in gold. So what the powers that be did was create these ETFs, and in creating these ETFs, they had to dramatically leverage or borrow off of gold to create a greater supply of gold. So they really created a leverage as a supply, a greater supply in gold. Well, a greater leverage, you can only go so far in creating through debt a greater supply of something. And that applies to gold and it applies to currency. you're going to come to a point where you can't continue to leverage or create a paper supply of any asset. And so the ability to positively create supply through debt or leverage in gold, you know, kind of reached its height in 2011 when gold popped. And so once that happened, once gold popped and they had reached the limits of their ability to profitably leverage gold, then they had to dramatically bring down the price. And so that's what happened to gold, is that basically, if people understand the concept of real estate, houses, being leveraged to the extent that the value of houses went underwater. In other words, the debt for the housing stock became greater than the value of the housing stock, and thus people understand that the value of their houses became underwater. In other words, the debt on their house is greater than the value. Well, that is what has happened with gold, is the leverage or the debt or the debt value of gold became greater than the supply. And so this is why we've had to deleverage the value of gold, and this is why the powers that be had to bring down and are continuing to bring down the price of gold.
Now, also, people don't realize is that the value of gold is often representative of the value of the currency that you're purchasing the gold in. If your currency ain't worth much, then the gold's going to cost you more. But what's happening now is that both the currency and the gold are being manipulated so that you ain't got nothing at all. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
Every day, yeah, yeah.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on American Freedom Radio. Tom Feiler is my guest. Tom, we only have about 12 minutes to wrap all this up. It's insufficient time. I apologize for that, but we're going to have to do our best.
Well, I appreciate any of the time that I'm able to spend with you and with your audience. Well, I appreciate the opportunity. Why don't we kind of end up on that fifth priority, to invest in food and natural resource assets or commodities. I was recently listening to Jim Rogers, who a lot of people know as a very wealthy investor. He's done very well over many years, especially investing in commodities. And, of course, he says the best investment is agriculture. Many, many times in discussions with Captain Lindsay Williams, he relates to me how people ask him, what do the elite invest in? And while we know the elite invest in the stock market, they own and they run the stock market to their benefit, and they have a lot of wealth tied up there. And they invest in gold and silver, and they benefit from that as well. And they move these markets up and down, you know, to their benefit. But what Chaplain Williams always says to me is the response that he gets from his elite friends and his elite contacts is that, and this makes sense. People just need to use their common sense. They own real assets. They own tangible assets. In other words, they own the assets that everybody needs in life, human beings need in life to subsist. So you know, they own grain, agriculture, and they own food assets that we need to be able to live and survive each and every day. They own timber, of which you need to build almost everything in life. They own copper, again, something that, that you need to be able to construct you know, things within life. And so that's what they own. You know, that's what their real economy is. And so while they make it very easy for us, and they kind of herd the rest of us into their stock market, that's what most people do. Most people know for all their lives that they invest in the stock market. They contribute money to a 401k and it goes into their stock market. And yet, you know, people aren't used to, or they don't know the opportunities that there are to invest in tangible resources and assets. And that this is something that myself and my associates have been doing for years, is helping people to get their money out of their system into tangible assets and natural resource assets. Recently, we put together a natural resources fund, which helps people to do that. By investing the natural resources fund, they can invest in diversified assets in natural resources, but also the natural resources fund hedges and protects all these assets as well. So it protects and hedges these natural resources assets, and it also protects and hedges the currency that are used in which to invest in these natural resource assets. We, after many years, put together this natural resources fund to make these types of strategies available to more people. So you don't need millions of dollars to be in, able to invest in natural resources assets, but you can invest in a diversified fund of these assets with lesser money so that more people are able to invest in these types of assets. We also would encourage people to look at businesses to invest in. The wealthiest people in the world are wealthy because they own or they have interests in businesses. Which invest in not only natural resource assets, but which invest in the very things that are necessary for people to be able to exist and to live in the world that we live in today. And so investing in businesses that provide the very means to our existence and survival are also things that people need to take a look at to invest in.
And if there's a, do you have a website for that agriculture investment fund?
We don't. Anybody who wants information on that can email me again to filer@tiac.net. Right now, we're just putting the fund together, and they're in assets that, that you know we have operated for years. There'll be a the fund will be investing in gold and silver, and we'll be hedging and protecting those assets. We already have businesses which invest in, for example, organic produce, also businesses that invest in cattle and other livestock. And we feed these livestock organic grass-fed feed, so they're very healthy food. For people to eat. So these are businesses that we've run for years, and we're going to be including them in these natural resources, in this natural resources fund.
Do you think that the organic food is one of the best investment opportunities? Because I've been looking around at what industrial agriculture is doing, and I see that the soil is becoming a lot less healthy. The food has almost no nutritional value left anymore. There isn't that being free of pesticides and herbicides advantage to it. Not to mention a lot of it, a lot of our food supply is currently controlled by the major elite agribusiness. And in my opinion, it's pretty much they're just launching soft kill weapons, you know, using the food as the delivery system. That's my opinion anyway. And I could be wrong, but I don't think so.
Well, you know, you're in my opinion, you're right on, and you really bring up the crux of really the survival of our freedom. And if I could get into just a quick discussion of that, you know, once our ability to grow our own food in the manner in which we want to grow it and to have our own food accessible to us. If that ever gets taken away from us, then the elite will have, and the powers that be will have total control over us. So absolutely, you know, we need to continue what I call a revolution in, you know, the everyday people of the world being able to grow and to harvest and to have businesses, their own food production businesses all over the world. You know, here in America, we have food co-ops. Well, you know, what food co-ops are, they are people wanting to know how their food is grown and the type of way the food is grown, and to be able to have the opportunity to buy food, which is organic, you know, which isn't based on pesticides and chemicals. And so, you know, we need to continue to develop our businesses in food production. And boy, we've got to make sure that our right and our freedom to do this is never taken away from us, because once that's taken away from us, then we've got total control against us.
Yeah. It kind of doesn't matter what you want. I want to resist you. You're a bad guy. Okay. How long are you going to be resisting me without food or water?
Exactly. A
couple of days? Tops?
Exactly. And, yeah. And again, this goes back to, this is what the powers that be understand. And that's why they own tangible assets and they own agricultural and food and commodity assets. We need to continue to this revolution in wanting to grow our own food. We need to continue that revolution. We need to build upon it. So instead of us taking our money and investing in their system, we need to take our money and we need to invest in our own economy. And that economy has to include our investing in food production businesses.
Well, from the ground up, I mean, because I think that's the problem with the world today, is that we do have a resource-based economy. The problem is the elite control and own the resources. I say if all remaining money in the world for the good, decent people that have money that are left, and I think they're growing and shrinking shrinking by the day, rather, need to think of this in terms of survival of the human race. Let me strike that, survival of the free human race. Because not a whole lot of point in surviving if you're not free, you know? And we've really got to think about this. The business system doesn't run for the benefit of people anymore. It's run by the benefit of a few scumbags. So if we want to turn that around, we've got to start at every single point where they've got us corrupted, which is more or less every single commodity, isn't it? And especially those, as you've rightly pointed out, are indeed essential for continued survival. So, Tom, I want to thank you very much for coming on the show today. Do you have any other websites or things you'd wish to plug? We've got less than a minute left.
Well, one website that kind of explains, I think, some of the things that we've been talking about here is www.wallstreettosmallstreet.com. That's Wall Street to Keo, smallstreet.com. So a lot of the information that we've kind of discussed here is maybe explained in greater detail there. But again, I would just encourage anybody who has any questions about our discussion and maybe wants to learn a little bit more about maybe how to accomplish some of these things, how to get your assets more in your control as opposed to in the control of the powers that be, just email my firm at filer@tiac.net.
All right, Tom Filer, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for appearing on the show at such a short notice and giving out some of this really healthy financial advice and strategy that those of you out there that are listening to this broadcast that still have something to invest left that the elite haven't stolen off you already can indeed use those resources to help the world head towards a better future rather than just giving it to the elite stock market. So, Tom, thank you. And also, ladies and gentlemen, I want to reiterate that this is a 100% listener-supported broadcast. I need you to go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. There is a bank account there and a PayPal, two different PayPal buttons optional. You can either make a donation or set up an automatic payment for a regular contribution. Thank you very much. We'll see you again.